G'day friends, and welcome to Happy Days. This is your pal, Jesse Drachman, on the mic, thanking each and every single one of you for taking the time to listen to this little podcast, proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. You can support my creative journey at www.freekproductions.com. Go there and you can pick up copies of my novels, comic book series, Freakenstein, as well as listen to this very podcast that you're checking out right now and various other creative endeavors. Hell, you can even leave a small donation if you want. It just helps me create what I create and continue the journey. So this episode is a fun one. It's a banger. And if you listen to last week's little drummer extraordinaire episode with my pal Bryce Mileto, you're a legend. Thank you. You're amazing, each and every single one of you. So we're going to keep the banging times rolling. And we're going to have another drummer chat with a very dear friend of mine, all the way from New York City, a gentleman named Will Spodnik. Some of you, if not many of you, would recognize him beating away on the skins with a band that I had the pleasure of touring with not too long ago, called Combi Christ. And he's a awesome guy. We've been friends ever since that tour. We've stayed in touch, and he's a genuine friend. And we have a great chat, a very positive chat. The recording was done at 2 a.m. So I'm a bit brain fried at this stage, but man, this is what you got to do to put out this content. So we had a great chat about all kinds of things. We do talk some fun touring memories, but we also discuss our mutual love of wrestling, as well as his work as a stage production manager at an iconic venue in New York City. And just life in general. It's a mixed bag of fun, very positive chat. He's got nothing but warm feelings of the life that he's led. And he was also, at one point, working for Roadrunner Records. So it's all here in this chat. We have a good time. And look, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button. It just helps this show just keep the wheels spinning. And go that one step further, hit the notification bell, and leave a review even. Let us know what you think, even if it's just two words or a sentence, you know, of what you thought of this episode and the other episodes before it. And if you haven't checked it out already, check out yesterday's episode, special edition, the Tuesday edition that came out with my chat with Grant Hardy from Monster Fest Australia. Great little chat about horror, as well as the new film Dashcam that's currently spinning around the cinemas nationwide as we speak, from Blumhouse Productions. So without further ado, let's get into this episode with my pal Will Spodnik here on Happy Days.
Good day, Jesse. How you doing?
Good, man. It's been a minute.
Dude, it's been a while, right? 2019,
right? Yeah, it's been mental, man.
The pandemic, it just throws everything, like, because you think everything is like last week, but then you realize it's last week plus 2 years.
Right. It's just crazy, man. Like, I just feel like we've lost 2 years. I don't know. Everyone's just in a weird headspace, man. We don't know what day of the week it is. We don't know what year it is. We don't know what's going on. But we're slowly making our way back to some kind of normal. So this is good.
Yeah, it does feel like you're slowly getting back to a normal, but it doesn't feel like it feels like a tainted normal, like move forward. It's not like a normal.
That's it, man. That's it. Yeah. And you're in New York, right?
Yeah, right outside the city.
Yeah, so I've heard, man, like you guys were, you know, during the madness, as I like to call it, everyone was in the thick of, you know, abnormality, but you guys in New York, you had it extremely abnormal.
Oh, New York was like, I mean, you know, the pandemic hit and then all the riots because of the police shootings that happened right after the pandemic.
Yeah.
New York is a pretty scary place to be for a while. Like I didn't go down there for at least 6 months to 9 months. I didn't go down to the city at all.
Shit, man.
It didn't feel like, just from stories you were hearing and stuff you were seeing on the news.
Yeah.
And like, I've grown up here my whole life. I grew up in Yonkers. It's like by car, you're like 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
from Manhattan. By train, you know, it could be like a half an hour depending on the train.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I mean, the city, I've always gone in and out of the city my entire life. And always like when people went, you know, I travel, you know, obviously tour around a lot, and people always like, oh, this place is dangerous. And I'm like, you know, but they're like, oh, but you come from New York City. And I've always been like, New York City's not that bad. Like, I've never really been scared to be in New York City or, you know, cautious about being in the city until the pandemic.
Yeah, it's true, man. Like, the moment you say that, I straight away think about when I was in Juarez, man. I didn't even feel like I was in danger at all, man. It was so weird, man. Just me and my friend, we had a great time, man. We just went for a short, like, hour. And, yeah, I don't know, man. It's weird. You put out the vibes, you get what you get, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the only place I ever felt weird with all my travels, the only place that I actually felt like, oh shit, something could go down here and like nobody would do anything, was Serbia.
Wow. Like, okay.
Yeah. Serbia definitely felt like, cause I think one of the guys even said to us, like we had like, I forgot, somebody in the band was talking to somebody about, you know, what to do or whatever. And the guy basically was like, oh, 30 minutes. I forget what was the main city in Serbia, the capital city, whatever the city is, we were staying in it for a day off, and the guy basically said to us like, oh, 30 minutes outside of here you could do whatever you want, including kill somebody. And he didn't laugh.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
that's mental.
Yeah, it was, you know, when we crossed into the border, like, you, if you're driving around Europe, most of the time you don't really do a border crossing. You kind of just drive like you're driving in the States.
Yeah.
You just cross into another state. There's not like a big, you know, state line that you cross and you have to go through, you know, border patrol or anything. But it's like that for most of the places. But when you get to Serbia, it's like a fortified border around that whole area, the whole country, I guess.
Right.
And it's not military people. It was like regular dudes wearing like short bathing suits, like, you know, the bathing suits that didn't even come down their knees, and they're holding, you know, semi-automatic, you know, machine guns, and they're like, you know, speaking to you in a different language.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly. I think it took us like 6 hours or something like that to get over the border there.
Man, that's mental. Like, I mean, you're a touring band and you go to a place like Serbia and you know, that's your first impression of a place like that. I mean, how do you break down the walls of like communication with people in a situation like that?
Money.
Yeah, right.
They were just looking for, they just basically, you know, the whole time they're basically just looking for a bribe, you know. And I don't remember what it cost, but it definitely cost upwards of, you know, hundreds of dollars American, if not more.
Jeez.
Just to get into, and we were lucky that we weren't playing. Like, we were driving through that area. I forgot where we were playing, but we had a day off, so we were just going to stay there.
Yeah.
And because of that, it was actually cheaper. Had we had been playing the show, it would have been a much bigger, you know, bribe to get in.
Yeah.
Because we'd be selling merch. And they actually they didn't believe us that we weren't going to play a show. So they actually put one of their own locks on our trailer.
Oh, wow.
And they put a guy on our bus who literally stayed on our bus. And he looked like, you know the Borat movie, the first Borat movie?
Yeah, yeah.
You know his like his assistant, like that heavy short guy?
Yeah, yeah.
That exact looking guy sat on our bus for like 2.5 days. Didn't get off the bus, got on the bus with like a small backpack and just sat there basically in the front lounge.
Dude. That's crazy, man.
Like, oh, dude, it was crazy.
That would have, like, you guys would have just felt, like, completely awkward on the bus dealing with that.
Yeah, well, we got, Andy always, he takes care of the band nicely on a day off. Like, we always had good days off. Like, he'd always get a hotel room. You know, at the very least, we'd get one hotel room for, like, a day room for everyone to, like, relax, shower in, and all that kind of stuff. But, like, on this day, we got a couple hotel rooms, and we got to have our own downtime and everything like that. So we didn't, like, the guy basically hung out on the bus by himself because we all just kind of did our own thing.
Did that bother you guys? Like, that this guy, you know, you got off and, you know, got to just go be yourselves, and this guy's, this creepy stranger's on your bus?
Well, no, the only thing with me, at least one other guy on the crew, it's like, you know, we like to smoke pot. And so when you're in, like, you know, the more east you go in Europe, the more dangerous it gets to have it.
Right.
You know, and when you're down in those areas, like, it can get pretty, you know, like, you could, like, lose a hand if you get caught with a joint on you type of thing.
Damn. That's crazy. It's like,
yeah, so it's like, you know, you do your best. You know, everyone has their own tricks on the road.
Yeah.
You know, how to hide stuff. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's pot. It's not like we're hiding anything, like, you know, it's pot.
Yeah. You know? It's the universal drug.
Yeah, and it's like, it sucks because it's one of the, it's like you said, a universal drug. It's practically legal everywhere in America now. But it's the thing that smells, like, it's the hardest thing to hide. Like, you can hide pills, cocaine, you can hide whatever you want so easily.
Yeah.
And they're so much more, you know, deadly. But pot, it's like you have to, like, wrap in airtight things and hot. It's just crazy. Those like, laws like that.
Yeah, I've heard some great stories about how people have hidden their pot to get through airports and stuff, man. It's mental.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, I've got some. I mean, the classic one, one of the best ones for, you know, I don't know if I should put it out there, but
up to you, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I mean, if any border patrol people are listening, it's just the refrigerator is the best place.
Yeah,
refrigerator is the best place, and that's all I'm gonna say. You know, there's a lot of ways to hide things inside things and refrigerators and stuff like that that you don't, you know. You don't have to worry about it then. But that being said, when you have some weird Siberian guy living on your bus, you don't want him to open up the wrong container.
Yeah. That's crazy. Man, tour stories, man. Aren't they the best?
Dude, it's so good. I love, you know, it's like I love meeting people that, you know, tour or have been on tours or work on the road. Yeah. Even like, not just musicians, just people that like work on the road. Because a lot of times it's the same lifestyle. Like we were talking about wrestling.
Mm.
It's like wrestlers are basically musicians. You know, it's like if you read books and you kind of know the behind the scenes stuff,
uh-huh.
It's kind of the same, very similar lifestyle.
Yeah. I do quite a lot of crew work on, you know, a lot of shows and festivals and stuff. And you hear some amazing stories from the crew, man. Like, just, I don't know, life on the road, man. It's a completely different universe to like a musician's universe.
Oh, it really is nothing like it. There really is nothing like it. It's a unique way to see things because for so many ups and there's so many like positives and negatives, like you get to see the country, but you're working.
Mm, exactly. You know? Yeah.
You get, but then on the other side, you get to see the country like, you know, most people wouldn't, because most people just travel in by themselves. They book their own hotel, you know, nobody knows them. And they, you know, when you go to a city, people want to hang out with you. People want to show you the cool things in that city that you might not know about. People, you know, so it's, you know, you got to eat at this place. You know, you have people offering up experiences to you. Whereas if you're just you can get that if you're just a regular backpacker traveling through places.
Yeah.
But when you're traveling with a band, it's kind of like people want to show you a good time.
Yeah, that's right. It's so true, man. It's so true. It's I wouldn't trade it for the world, man. It's a great way to meet people.
You've gone to the States, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you guys have done Europe and Russia?
Done Europe. Haven't done Russia. Just we did the UK and Scotland and Germany.
Germany.
Leipzig to be exact. So, yeah. Oh,
I always like that. Like, I only know that. I only know Leipzig because of the Mayhem record that they recorded. So I always wanted to like play in Leipzig just because it's like, ooh, it seems like a cool German metal town.
Yeah, we played in a club as part of the Wave Gothic Treffen festival.
Oh, that just happened too, right?
Yes. Just recently this week, I think it was. Yeah, good times, man. Like, it's crazy watching a whole city transform into the biggest congregation of goth culture I've ever seen.
That's the best when you're driving into those festivals. I've been fortunate enough to do a bunch of those festivals around Europe, and like they're usually like in the middle of nowhere, and you'll be driving on a bus, you know, just empty land, empty forest, empty, you know, hills, and then all of a sudden you get to this little, like you would think it's a movie set, like this little medieval European town, like, you know, brick houses and, you know, all like, it's like, oh, this cute little town. And then the closer you get into the town, you start seeing, like, you know, like people in black, you know, leather and makeup walking around, and you're like, oh my god, well, we must be getting closer to the venue.
Yeah.
And then, like, you pull up and it's like a gigantic, you know, like festival, you know, area. It's like, and I've gotten to see like these from like high point of vantages, and you see, it's like just like one gigantic square, and it's like, this is for parking, this is for camp, and it's like, but it's really neatly organized in like a farm field, and it's just connected to these little tiny like mom and pop towns, and like, you got to wonder what they think. I mean, it definitely helps their economy for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, they got to be like, oh, the goths are coming. You know?
I know, right? It's quite a visual thing, man, to see a regular town just transform like that. I've never seen anything like it, man.
That doesn't happen in America. In America, we have festivals, but they're more pop. Like the rock and roll festivals in Europe are, they honor the bands. Like, there's bands in Europe that like headline these, you know, 50,000 plus festivals, and they come to America and they play to 200 seater clubs.
Yeah.
You know, it's in Europe, you're respected more, and the fans are into it more. The fans, like, everybody is dressed in jeans and black leather. When you come to a festival in America, it's a lot of dudes.
Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of bros, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, and it's the lineup isn't always as good. Like, a European festival lineup is insane. When you look at like health,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Never happened in America because those bands wouldn't be, you know, looked at as big as. You know, but
so let me ask you, Will. Like, you know, playing. You know, you've been fortunate. You've played all over the world, man. But you know, what's it like to step on a stage in a European festival situation and just feel that electricity from the audience?
Well, you're basically numb.
Yeah.
For me, from my my experience anyway, it's like it's like anything else, like nothing you would imagine. Like, everybody dreams of, like, you see, you know, like when you're a kid, you see like those. Oh, I want to play in those big, where it's just like a wave of people and you can't even see where it is. And then you're up there doing it, and it's kind of surreal. You know, it's kind of like, it's kind of exactly what people would say. Like, you know, you really only see the first couple of rows because it's the truth. You really, everything just kind of looks like a painting after that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like kind of like a bunch of colors, but the feeling, like when you hit a drum.
Yeah.
At one of those festivals, it feels like Jurassic Park. You just like, you hit the floor tom and it's like boom,
boom.
Yeah. And it's like, it just spreads out all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's really, I learned about performing, you know. I played a bunch of shows before I played any festivals, but you learn with those festivals, like, little tiny movements are magnified by so much more.
Absolutely.
So just by tilting your head a little bit to the left, it seems like so much more on that grander scale.
Yeah.
It's just like the whatever energy you put out is just being exploded, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now in Leipzig, man. Like, I remember just walking out, like, I remember walking out before we were, you know, our stage time, and just thinking, shit, no one's going to turn up. And then you know, stage time, you walk out and the room's just full of people. It's ridiculous. And they're all cheering and excited to see you. And yeah, it's a very euphoric feeling, but everything is just amplified to the next level.
Yeah, I have, I actually have a picture, a 3-picture set on my Instagram account where we did the Grass Pop Festival in Belgium. And like, we're on side of the stage, you know, like the festivals all run. So that's the other thing, like the crews and the way they set up these things and have everything running, like,
so
like
good.
Yeah, it's so good. There's no room to fuck up. The band can only fuck up by like, yeah, not having the equipment in the right place at the right time or something like that. But you're given so much like time. You're basically given like a stage behind this, your stuff, as the other, you know, basically there's 4 stages going on. So there's 2 stages, like, you know, where you can see, and you have one stage being performed on while the other stage is being built. And then behind both those stages are the next bands on each of those stages too. So you're always like 3 bands ahead being set up.
So crazy, man. Like I remember that too, man. It's freaking, I've never seen anything like it.
Drum sets everywhere. You're just walking, you're bumping shoulders like, oh shit, that's Dave Lombardo. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
You know, but then you get on the side stage, they move all your stuff out, and then you have like, you know, 5-10 minutes. You don't really, the only bad thing about festivals like that is you, unless you're the headlining band, like the last, you know, like the last band to go on, you don't get a sound check. You get like a quick, you know, 5-10 minute max line check, you know, and it's not really, those first couple of songs, every festival is usually like trying to adjust everything. Yeah, yeah. And it's usually like that live anyway, but at a festival, you're not using your in-ears because you can't use your own wireless stuff. You have to use the festival's wireless stuff. So nothing is dialed into your,
your setup. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have to do that on the fly, which is kind of, you know, a festival, big festival, you think you'd, you know, but that's how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually nuts, cool.
One of the festivals, like I handed my in-ear pack.
Yeah.
And it had Ishan's name on it from Emperor. He was the last one to use that pack. I was like, oh, that's fucking cool.
Dude, that is crazy, man. You must have a couple of moments like that over in Europe, like just bumping shoulders, like you say, with the likes of, you know, Dave Lombardo or people like that. Did you have moments where you just completely fanboyed a bit?
My fanboyish, my idol is like Mike Patton. So I definitely... I've definitely fanboyed to him a couple of times that I've met him.
Awesome.
But like, honestly, I'm kind of like, I've kind of gotten, not, I don't want to say like I've gotten used to it or anything like that, but I've been kind of working in with musicians and playing with musicians. And I worked at Roadrunner Records and I've been around a lot of these guys. And the more and more you're around them and then you're at, you know, I don't want to say at the same level, but I played on stages with them.
Yeah.
You kind of, you just realize this, they're just regular people.
That's it. That's what I always say, man. They're regular people with an interesting job.
Yeah. And most of them kind of are just, they realize that. And they realize like, hey, I'm not cool. I just, for some reason, people like me up here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange how it all works, man. But yeah.
You do meet the occasional guy where he's like, you know, he invented music. But
yeah.
For the most part, most musicians are pretty humble, regular, kind of like blue-collar guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much truth in that, man, because there's so many of them that they're just so down to earth, it's not funny. And it's usually the ones that just sort of don't have that spark and charisma that usually the dicks, as I like to call them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy, man. Hey, what about you've mentioned, you know, a bit of a experience being around musicians and music and everything like that. I mean, being part of Roadrunner Records too, man, like that's a trip in itself, man. Like you see things right from the ground floor, like how the whole thing works, right?
Oh, and dude, when I look back, like I haven't done anything big enough yet to have like a life story. But like I constantly think about like like almost like a Forrest Gump type situation where when I look back at my history, I'm like, holy shit, I've done all, I've been really lucky. Like I've been really, I've been in the right place a bunch of times. I've, you know, I've worked my ass off, you know, but I've been really lucky, like with some of the situations I've been in and people I've met and experiences I've had, where I do feel like it's like sometimes like Forrest Gump. People sometimes, and it's just like, wow, you know that guy, or you met this person. It's like, I don't know how.
Because you were A&R at Roadrunner, was that correct?
Yeah, I was A&R coordinator. Yeah, I wasn't an official A&R guy, but I was on the way to becoming that.
Right. Okay. So you work closely with the wheel and deal of finding the talent that would inevitably sign.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. I did a lot of work in high school and stuff as like street teams. Was street teams really big?
Yeah. Not as probably big as what you guys had in the States, but yeah, we definitely held our own.
Was it like where like after in basically anything, any show in the 90s or late 90s, as soon as you left, there'd be like 10 people outside of a venue handing you, you know, sample CDs, stickers, flyers. Actually, that doesn't happen anymore. But I mean, it used to be so bad that after a concert, the venues would have to have their staff clean up like a block perimeter of, you know, outside the club of all the, you know, stuff that people looked at and then dropped on the floor. Like I remember some shows would be like, you'd be walking through piles of stickers that people looked at and like, nah, I don't want it, and dropped it on the floor. And,
oh man. But,
yeah, then it was good, but that's how people did it. That's how you promoted back. That was right before the internet and stuff. That was your only really way. These people they're at a Soulfly show, so they're going to be into my band, so I hand out a bunch of stickers.
Yeah.
You know? But that's how I basically got into the label side.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that. So, yeah, I'd love to hear more about this, man, because I think it's the Wild West.
Oh, the old days?
Yeah. The Wild West of rock and roll, man. Like, you know, just finding incredible bands. And whereas now it's a different ball game. But back then it was just, you know, exactly that. Handing out stickers at shows and saying, hey, you like Seven Dust? You'll dig this.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's it. You know, and actually a band that I, when I was trying to start bringing my own bands into Roadrunner, my first band that I brought in, I was trying to get a development deal. They actually, I got their CD after a show. I remember in Times Square, I think it was called the WWE building at the time. It was like I think it might be the PlayStation Theater now. But I remember they handed me a 4-song sampler CD when I came out, and I listened to it on the subway home. And the next morning, I was trying to get in touch with them because I thought the singer was one of the best voices I ever heard. You know?
Wow.
And that's how things happen, you know. And that singer actually went on to be in a band. You ever hear that band called Thank You Scientist?
Yeah.
That singer was in the band that I heard on that CD.
Damn, dudes, that's crazy how the world works.
Yeah, that band broke up. They didn't do anything, but then he formed another that, you know, hooked up with those guys and Thank You Scientist, and he played Madison Square Garden.
Crazy. The crazy how this whole universe works, man. You, 1 minute you're handing out CDs, the next minute you're playing Madison Square Garden, man. So
yeah,
it's mental. It's crazy. Yeah.
But that's how things happened back then. It's like that was the whole thing. And you would spend, I remember being in bands at the time, and we'd be like, oh, we have to spend $100 to get like 1,000 stickers. Mm. But if we hand them out at the right shows, you know, maybe two of those people will come to our next gig or something. You know, that was the game.
And it's when you look back at it, it's like such a slog, but man, like so much fun, right? Like just talking to people, making that connection. You don't have that today.
I would take that any day. I hate it when it transitioned from that into MySpace and then Facebook.
Yeah.
Like I hated that because it went from, how are we going to promote this? How are we going to get the people to find out about this show? Where are we going to put up flyers? What bar are we going to go to socialize? It went to, did you make a Facebook event page?
Yeah.
Like, and that's it. That's all we're doing is making a Facebook event page.
Yeah.
You know, that it went, you know, and that's all promoters. promoters did the same thing, not only the bands, because it used to be promoters would, they, you know, they'd actually do what their title is. They'd promote.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't just book a show. They would actually promote it.
Yeah.
It quickly, once Facebook came around, it quickly turned into, hey, I'm a promoter. I made an event page and you guys are up to, it's up to you guys to sell tickets now.
Yeah, it sucks, man. Like, I mean, like I've read online, like bands, there's bands coming up through the ranks now and I'm just like watching what they do. And they're like doing things like little competitions where it's like, oh, like this post and share it with your friends and you can go in the draw to win this and that. And it's like, oh my God, what's happening here?
Do you want a free download? Then get five of your friends to share our post. It's like, but that's what it is, you know?
I just don't see the tangibility in that because you know, when you walk up and make physical contact with a person and you hand them a CD or a sticker or something, I feel like you've got a greater chance of making that investment in that person liking your product.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
If that band had given me a download card or something,
yeah,
I might not have listened to it. They gave me a CD, you know, I put it in my CD. You still had a CD player. This is definitely before like the iPod, but like put it in my CD player and you know, that's how it happened. But now it's not that easy. And the problem is too, back then it seemed like there was like 10 bands.
Mm.
Now it's like everybody has 10 bands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty mental these days. I'm all kinds of curious and as well, like, you know, you talking about the Roadrunner chapter and stuff.
Sidetrack. That's
no, no, this whole thing has a sidetrack to it. It's beautiful. I'm digging it. But I'm curious, like, you know, obviously as a musician and that as well, like your formulative years, you know, coming up, you know, as a kid and all that. What sort of appealed to you first? Was it, you know, the appeal of playing an instrument, or was it just the joy of following bands?
Yeah, I was definitely a fan. I'm definitely, you know, even to, you know, current time, like I literally just got an Igor Cavalera. I work at the Gramercy Theater in New York City now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had this Max Cavalera tattoo on my leg for a long, for like 15, 20 years.
Mm.
When I met him and got him to sign my leg. And because the Cavalera, even Max and Igor are huge, like Mike Patton and then the Cavalera, they're like very big influences on my drumming. Just like I loved those. They were early records, like the Chaos AD and Roots, and then the first couple Soulfly records.
Yeah.
That was like when I was peaking in my musical maturity, like development. And
that was so a good, very good time for music, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, I mean, even till like 2 weeks ago, I got this order. I saw Igor at the Gramercy. Max and him played Beneath the Remains and Arise.
No way.
Yeah, sick tour. Really, everything they're doing now is just top notch. Kind of sucks that they don't get to use the Sepultura name, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
But like I said, I had him autograph my leg, and I got a tattoo. So like, you know, still a fanboy at, you know, after all these years.
That's still so cool. You know,
always will be a fan.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, no, I very early on was a fan, and very early on I knew I wanted to be in music. I remember being in my mom always tells me I had like speech therapy or some kind of like after school programs that I would do when I was a kid for extra help and stuff. Mm-hmm. And whenever we would do arts and crafts, I would always make album covers. And this is when I was like 6, 7 type of thing.
Yeah.
And I would always make album covers, like, and I would call them record covers with me on them. And I would always explain that this is what I want to do. I want to be on the cover one day type of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was. I was actually originally a guitar player when I was a kid, but switched over to drums, like, you know, banging pots and pans when I was probably like 10.
Yeah.
You know, but didn't get my first real kit until probably like 16. I grew up in an apartment, like a tiny apartment, so I didn't really have space or capability to make a lot of noise. But then once, you know, got to high school and all that, you play on the high school, you know, the school drum kit, and basically self-taught, you know.
Yeah. That's cool.
But yeah, just always kind of wanted to, you know, I mean, I think my first band was in the eighth grade. We were called the Stereotypes.
Serious.
That's and we awesome. Were like, we were like a punk band. And like, but we were like, you know, I have a twin brother. It was like me, my twin brother, and this other kid. And we were like, you know, not the glasses. You can't rock and roll with glasses. But we were like three little nerdy kids with glasses. And I remember like one of our songs was called Poser.
Yeah.
And like the chorus was like, oh, I'm not a poser like you. And he's like, you know, so stupid. Like, but it was like, that was, you know, first band, you know, eighth grade, I think, seventh, eighth grade.
Dude, that's super cool, man. Like, that's, I don't know. That's the sort of stuff you just look back on. You go, I did that. Well, that was fun.
You probably had an early start. You probably had a band as a teenager, right?
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. I think anyone that starts in music, man, you haven't lived till you started your first band when you were a teen, man. Like, you just go through all the bumps and grinds of just, I don't know, just playing horrible, horrible songs or just, I remember weekends of just jamming for hours and hours till my voice had nothing left in it. And then you'd still jam some more, you know?
And thinking you're good, but like looking back going, oh my God.
Exactly, man. Like, you just go, oh my God, I'm so not in key. I'm horrible. But you were just having the time of your life, man, with your best friends and just living in the moment. Like, that was, yeah, wouldn't trade that for the world.
Do you see like a lot of people like that? Like, my whole thing with the music industry and like, quote unquote, making it.
Yeah.
Was my thing was, you just got to stay in the game. And I feel like so many people along the way who I played with or shared stages with or just, you know, talked about bigger, grander things with, I feel like they'd never stayed in the game. Mm. And, you know, you get the regular job or, you know, whatever. And you just kind of put the guitar down for a week and then it becomes a month. And then all of a sudden, you know, whatever, you know, I feel like it's just about staying in the game. It kind of sad sometimes when I see like people that I know and I'm like, oh fuck, he's just kind of like, he doesn't do it anymore, you know, he just kind of gave it up. And it's it's just about, I don't know if I could ever, that people are like, oh, do you know, how long are you going to do this, you know, blah blah blah. And it's like, I don't know if I could give it up because I don't know what I would give it up to do.
Yeah, it's a kind of thing where like I feel like there's no off switch, you know, it's in your blood. Like it's like being a boxer or a wrestler. Once it's in your blood, it's in your blood. It's very hard to turn your back on it. But you meet these like, people and
project's over, you go to the next project. That project's over.
Exactly.
Find another project. It's never occurred to me like, oh, this project's over. Oh, I guess that's it. I guess I'll take up fishing.
Yeah, or get a real job, or, you know, whatever they go on about.
Well, because you know what the other thing, too, is now you kind of have to have a, you know, a real job. You can't there's bands now where it's like they're playing like those big festivals we're talking about. You know?
Yeah.
Then they come home and they have a 9-to-5 type of job at Guitar Center or something. Like, you really can't just be a musician anymore.
No, it's the times have changed drastically, man. So, you know, the hustle is real.
Yeah, it's basically now that you hear everybody say, like, you know, you like, because I hear every day, it's like I do like 3 or 4 shows a week now at the Gramercy.
Right.
And it's funny too, like we were talking about earlier about how, you know, musicians are all the same. And it's the same thing, whether it's a 4-band ska package or 6-band death metal tour, they're all the same.
Mm.
You know, the bands come in and it's like, okay, this is that band. Oh, this is the band that doesn't like to set up their gear. This is the band that doesn't, no, this is the band that needs a lot of attention. This is the band that, you know, every band, no matter what package it's in, there's always that band. And same thing with inside those bands. It's like, oh, this is the bass player that wears the hat. This is the drummer that, you know, it's just like, it's just funny. No matter what genre it is, they're all this, you're all the same people.
Exactly, man. We breathe the same air. We eat the same food. And yeah, it's crazy how, Yeah.
It's the same like intricacies and the same weirdnesses, just different genre of music, yeah, or different number of bands. It's
100% right, man. So true. And you do production at the Gramercy Theatre as well?
Yeah, stage manager.
That's so cool, man. Like what a iconic venue to work at.
Yeah, like again, that's like, it's like lucky. Like I'm just kind of like, when I'm standing there, I'm like, if you watch my like my Instagram stories or whatever, like I usually put up like side stage video.
Yeah.
From most of the shows I'm working.
I've seen them, yeah.
And I'm literally like, you know, some of these bands like I know, but I'm not a fan of, and like people, they're like, you know, 700 sold out, you know, people there dying to see these people, and I'm standing there side stage with the best seat in the house, and I'm just like, you know, you have to pinch yourself sometimes. It's like, you know, how do I get this? You know, how did I get this job type of thing?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. Like, I don't know. I'm a real venue nerd, man. I any venue I've ever played at, I spent ages just looking at every nook and cranny in the place, man. Do you get that sort of buzz yourself?
You play Gramercy?
No, but hey, never rule it out, right? So
yeah,
but I'll definitely come visit. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, the Gramercy it's a really cool venue. It's actually one of the first. It actually is the first big venue I played at in a band when I was in high school. We opened up for Alien Ant Farm.
No way, that's crazy.
Yeah, and it was really cool, and it was at the Gramercy. So, and then the first time I played New York City with Combi Christ was at the Gramercy, and now I work at the Gramercy. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of like a.
It's all fitting. Full circle for you.
Yeah, and you know, it's, and like you said, it's a great venue. It's definitely like we get so many good shows there, and so like so many variety. Like I'll do a comedy show, then a TikTok rap star show, followed by like a death metal show, followed by an Irish, you know, three girl fronted band type of thing, all in the same week.
And yeah, I love that.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I used to promote bands and at one of the Hard Rock Cafes. Man, I used to just love that. Just the fun, the adventure of every week, just something different was going on, man. Like, yeah, it was...
When you're on tour, that's what basically, you know, you obviously get a high and the adrenaline rush from performing. But, you know, people don't realize that when people are depressed or unhappy or whatever, it's because they have kind of no goals, no nothing to look forward to, or you know, but stuff like that. When you're on the road, you basically start every day, like, you know, when you go into your job and you're just like, oh, like another Monday or whatever.
Yeah.
And you just put up with the whole week. When you're on the road, forget about playing a show. Forget about the actual, you know, fun part of being on stage and performing. You show up at a venue that's pretty much empty. There's nobody in there. The stage is empty. And then in 3 hours, you have the stage set up. You have sound coming out. And then 3 hours after that, doors are open and you have people coming in. And then you get to perform. And then, you know, the show's over and you have like that, you know, a beer with, your crew and your bandmates. And we did it. And you break everything down and you pack it up in the trailer and you see the empty venue again. And you see the trailer door close. And it's a feeling of accomplishment. You know, it's a feeling of like, we did it. We conquered.
Yeah.
We came in, you know, and you, whether, you know, again, take away the, because I've actually toured, you know, as a crew member and as a performer in different bands. And it's the same sense of accomplishment, whether I've performed or not. Mm. When you close that trailer door, it's like, yeah, man, you know, we did it. On to the next town, on to the next. And you don't get that on a daily basis in your regular life when you just leave a regular job. Some, you know, if you just like leave a regular job, you're not like, I got to come back tomorrow. It's kind of like, yeah, we fucking did it. And that you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, we got to do this today. And there's a lot of the same problems, but it's always different. And so that's what I love about
it's so true. Yeah.
It's like, I kind of get that tour experience. Cause every day I show up a half an hour before the band gets there. So I get that empty venue and the, you know, empty stage, and then I get their stage plots and what they need, what the band needs and what the band's bringing in and what, you know, and then they come in, we talk about what they're setting up and what we're doing. And show them everything. And you basically, you're hanging out with these guys all day. And then, you know, you're getting them ready to go on stage. You're bringing them to the stage. You're helping them what they need. And, you know, it's kind of like being on tour, except every day you get a different band. It's not the same band every day.
Yeah. It's an amazing experience. Just hearing you talk about that just brought back so many memories of me doing exactly that same job at my venue. And it's just I don't know, man, it's a euphoric feeling. Just, I don't know, just being, one minute you're in an empty venue, just getting everything ready, and then next minute you're just transported. Right down to just closing the doors and putting the lock on for the night, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, it feels good.
You really do.
And you see a lot of bands, you know, like the touring community is very small. It's a lot of people, but it's small. So if, you know, 9 times out of 10, at least one show I do a week, I'm going to know somebody in a band or somebody in a crew at least once a week. I'm going to know somebody. So it's always getting to see an old friend or somebody you haven't seen in a while, or, you know, or just reconnecting, like, oh, hey, you know, my buddy, this. Yeah. Oh, you're friends with him. I'm friends with him too. Let's go get a slice of pizza on the break. You know? And then all of a sudden, you know, you have a new connection with a new band or something like that.
Yeah. I get that same vibe working crew jobs, man. Like you see a lot of the guys that have been around the game for a while, and they're just like talking about, you know, I was just down in Tasmania one day and next day I'm up in Rockhampton, and, you know, just trading war stories on the road. And it's just exhilarating.
Then everybody's got a great story.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
If you give anybody in a crew or a touring party, if you give them 5 minutes and say, give me a good story, you're going to get a good story.
Absolutely. It's the best, man. I just sit there like a excited school kid. I just love listening to the stories, man, because it's just, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard a dull story yet. They're always good.
Yeah, and it's just, you sometimes you're sitting there with people and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they're telling me this.
Yeah.
You know, type of thing. It's like, whoa, that's really behind the scenes. That's really behind the curtain, you know, type of thing. But then you realize you're kind of all, you're all in like a fraternity type of thing together. So there's it's like a trust, and it's like a respect between everybody.
It is. It really is. And
I feel like I'm connected to you and your band. Yeah. Just from that, two weeks. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it feels like we're bonded through that. You know,
yeah, it's crazy how the whole thing works, isn't it? Like, I feel the same way, man. Like, all the guys, man, they're just, I don't know, just that bonding is, I don't know, it's sacred. It's hard to put into words to people.
It is sacred. It is.
Yeah, it's special, man. It really is. And, that were two of the best weeks ever. It was amazing.
Yeah, dude, so much fun. Just the times hanging out and shooting the shit and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, shows. I mean, you guys are fucking killer band live.
Thank you.
You know, so it's definitely, that was definitely a great package and super fun to be a part of.
Yeah. I got to ask you, man, like, I'm always intrigued by when Americans come here and they experience Australia for the first time. How was your first experience for Australia?
I loved it. I was just talking to somebody the other night who's toured in Australia as well.
Yeah,
and we were both saying how, in a completely non-offensive way, it's very American, in a good way, not in a bad way.
Yes, it is.
It's when, you know, and even down to the food, like when I go to Europe, I don't like eating a cheeseburger in Europe unless it's at like a McDonald's. They all have kind of a weird taste to the meat.
Yeah.
That we, you know, it's probably more the fact that in America we have shit added that shouldn't be added, and in Europe they don't add it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's why it tastes a little different. But like when we went to Australia, the meat, everything tasted very similar to home.
Yeah, there's a pride there.
Yeah, and it felt like cool parts of America. It felt like you guys had entire sections that were San Diego, California, you know, where it's like a tiny city in America is like a whole capital region in Australia. And you guys are super chill. That's the other thing. It's like everybody, in Australia was super humble.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Nobody was like, you know, like trying to big dick us or any, you know, in any situation, like a cab driver, nothing. Nobody. I was like, everyone here is so super chill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool, man. It's a good little country, man. We go all right, man. So yeah, it's pretty special, man. And I don't know. We got some like America, man. We got some cool people. We got some cool sights and got some great food, man.
I gotta say the meat pies were the shit.
Was
is it the one in Sydney? Is that Harry's Meat Pies? I think the famous one.
It's right on there. Yeah. I think that's Harry's Pies. Yeah, yeah.
I think I ate there because I stayed in Sydney like 2 or 3 days after our last show. I went surfing on the Bondi Beach.
Nice.
I got to do that whole all that stuff, but I think I ate there every day. I think I ate there at least.
So one. Cool. What'd you think of the beaches?
The beaches are the same, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing. I really, you know, I did surfing for 2 days. I loved every second of it.
Yeah. Are you a surfer by heart?
I live in New York, so whenever I go to California, or like I was in Australia and I took advantage of, like, if I go to places where I have a day off and I have. Yeah. I'm going to try and surf if there's a surfing thing there.
Yeah.
But I don't make an effort to in New York just because I don't – you can surf in Long Island and New Jersey, but it's not the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's but totally I say,
those the kangaroos, they definitely weird. They were kind of scary to see to me.
They can be intimidating, mate.
Yeah, they weren't threatening to us at all, and they moved away as we walked, you know, like near them type of thing.
Mm.
But when you get close, they're fucking, they're like, they could do some damage.
Man, they can, dude. Like, especially the big male, the alpha male ones. They're like, I don't know if you saw any of the big muscly male kangaroos. They're jacked up, dude.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we saw one that looked like he was working out, like he was like bench pressing.
Yeah, like they're ridiculous, man. Yeah, it's frightening.
And they're literally, they look like gigantic rats.
Yeah,
and their tail, they look like some scientific experiment. Like somebody made gigantic rats and then dropped them on this island.
Yeah, it's like something out of Island of Dr. Moreau, man. It's mental.
Yeah, they don't look real, and and they could come at you like, you know, they're kind of like deer. In the sense, like, we have deer over here, they're everywhere. And that's kind of the sense I got from the kangaroos, except deer are very non-threatening at all. And they're so timid of you, you know, unless you're holding an apple, they might come close to you.
Yeah.
But the kangaroos, it felt like there was always like three or four of them, and they're meaty. And they're you could see the knives on their feet.
Mm.
And it's like they could fuck you up in a split second, and you wouldn't even have a chance to get away.
No, it's crazy, man. I remember like being on the road in the States and just watching out for deers and stuff like that. And I thought that was such a trip. And it must have been the same for you over here, like hearing about kangaroos on the road. You got to watch out for the kangaroos.
Yeah. Well, I mean, deer, the worst thing that a deer will do to you is, you know, it might kick you. It might kick you with like, and you know, you might get a black eye, you know, where if it kicks you in the face or something, it's going to kick you, but it's not going to stab you with a 7-inch long toenail.
No.
Impale your belly. It's not going to, you know, that's the thing I always, you know, animals don't fuck around. Like animals don't, like the kangaroo could be like, you're getting too close to me, buddy, back up and give you.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it won't. It'll just go for a full-on boom, you know, like rip your guts out and then just walk away like nothing.
Yeah. Some of the animals, man, like, they're crazy, man. Like, they look all, some of them look all cute and cuddly. Like, for example, the koala, right? It looks cute and cuddly, and you just go, oh, wow, I just want to hug it and just give it a big. No, you don't want to do that because the fucking thing will tear your face off.
Oh, they're not nice?
Oh no, they are. They're placid and friendly and stuff. But if it doesn't want you to touch it, man, you're gonna know about it.
Oh yeah, you see, that's what people with animals, like, it took me. I'm a dog person now,
I love
dogs. Like, you know, it took me a long time to get, because just as a kid, I was never bit, but it was always like, it seemed like there was always angry dogs around me as a kid. So I just never kind of got comfortable with dogs. And it's and my argument with dogs, you know, and other animals is always the same. It's like, at the end of the day, it's an animal. And you know, that monkey's your best friend now, but you could look at it wrong, or it could feel threatened for some odd reason that you don't know about, and it rips your face off for one second.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel the same way with monkeys in when I was in Malaysia, dude. Like, you come across monkeys, and I don't know, some of them can be really intimidating, man. You just don't want to go anywhere near them.
Well, because they're so... That's the other thing with animals is animals aren't weak. Like, every part of an animal is basically muscle meant to sustain its life.
Mm.
So you're not going to, like, get a weak monkey. You know, oh, I'm going to grab him by his leg and that, you know, his leg's going to be weak. No, his leg is a fucking meat muscle, you know, meant to hang upside down on trees. And, you know, there's no weakness on these things. They're all muscle and they're all, you know, attack. So.
Freaking A, man. Animals, man. Love them. You know, one thing we've talked about on and off online has been wrestling.
Oh, yeah, you're into wrestling, right?
Hell yeah. I haven't watched it for a minute, but dude, man, love a good wrestling match.
Yeah, I think I was into it as a kid, and then was into it as a teenager, and then I didn't watch it when it became like the when WWF became WWE.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of the PG era where they kind of like became like a Wall Street company. And then it just lost my interest. And, but I started to get back into it, right before the pandemic, because this new company, called AEW, have you heard of them?
Yes. They're all the rage.
Yeah, it literally is like late 90s, you know, the best of late 90s type wrestling with modern type humor and all. Because I always like, I like wrestling. I like to see like a match where I'm like not thinking, oh, they know who's going to win or something. I like watching the match going, man, I wonder who's going to win this.
Yeah.
You know, even if that's just a storyline, because I hate going into when it's like, oh, Roman Reigns against this nobody. Well, obviously, there's nobody's going to lose. And they didn't even do a story to build up the match. So obviously, it's, you know, then the match is like, well, you know, this guy's going to win.
Well, it's like, Sorry.
Oh, no, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, man, straight away, I just thought of one of my favorite unpredictable moments is WrestleMania 6, Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan.
Oh, dude, Warrior's my guy.
Dude, that was... Yeah, no one could pick that one.
Well, and that's one of those, what's even more rare about that is there's the term in wrestling is a baby face and a heel. And basically a baby face is a good guy and a heel is a bad guy. And you generally don't, you can put two heels against each other, but you generally don't put two baby faces against each other because you don't want to split your crowd. You don't want to have the crowd have to choose against one of these good guys. So that right there was one of the, you know, it's actually a really big event just for that, because it's one of the biggest babyface versus babyface events ever. And you didn't know who was going to win. You would think, Ultimate Warrior is going to win because he's this big up-and-comer, but then Hulk Hogan never lost.
Well, that's it, man. And Hulk Hogan's the people's champion at the time, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was a great memory. I remember seeing that as a kid.
Man, I would have loved to have been there, dude. Like that's one of the most historic events ever.
You guys get, I know that the WWE is pretty big down there, right? Like,
yeah, we've got it here now, but we didn't get it events like that at that time period. I don't think we would have got it. I think we would get it probably after the fact.
Oh, like on VHS rental type?
Yeah. So sadly that was the downside of it, but
that's how we did it. My mom worked at a flower shop, and one of the guys that worked at the flower shop had we called it back in the day an illegal black box.
Yeah,
and it was basically cable back in, I don't know how it was in Australia, but before everything got digital, before it was like everything was like digital cable and all that kind of stuff, yeah. It was, you could have the channels on your TV, but now if you go to a channel and you don't pay for that channel, it just says you don't subscribe to this channel, or, you know, to add this channel to your package or whatever. But back in the day when it was like antennas and shit like that, you would go to channels that you didn't necessarily pay for. And instead of just seeing a black, you know, screen, you would see a scrambled screen.
Oh, wow.
You could hear the audio, but the screen was all out of focus and scrambled, and there would be lines, and you could make out stuff, like you could figure out what movie you were watching and stuff like that, but
yeah.
you know, it wouldn't be enjoyable or whatever. But so you'd get these things, they were either called a scrambler, a de-scrambler, or it was like a black box, and you basically would connect it between your TV and the antenna, and it would unscramble all those, like the HBO channel and stuff, and basically the pay-per-view channels, which is where you'd get the wrestling events. My mom's friend had the black box. So when the pay-per-views were always on Sunday, and he would tape them on a VHS, and then we would get it, the VHS, by like Wednesday or Thursday. So, and luckily back, obviously there was no internet back then, so I didn't have to worry about any spoilers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that we were like, when's Harry going to give us the tape? When's Harry going to give us the tape? So innocent, sweet day. You know, now it's like when the pay-per-view is going on, it's like you're reading Twitter at the same time, trying to see what's going on. Yeah. Right now.
Yeah. And now you can just watch the bloody thing on your phone even, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch it on your phone and tweet about it and hear other people's reactions at the same time as the match is going on.
Yeah, that's just a weird trip, man. I just I don't know if that's the kind of world I like associating with, but there's something about the prestige of seeing something in the flesh and in person, and I don't know, living in the moment. I think that's more exciting, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing like going to a movie theater now.
Yeah.
There's still. I don't know if you're. Do you go? Are you a movie theater guy or no?
All the way, man. All the way.
Because there's just something at when I'm at home, no matter how good a movie is, at some point I'm gonna get up. At some point I'm gonna check my phone. At some point I'm gonna start a conversation with whoever I'm watching it with. And when you go to a movie theater, it's just like, leave me alone. Lights are off, and it's just like I'm watching a movie now.
Yeah. It's a real process, man. Like I'm blessed that I live near the city and we have a classic movie theater here. So I get to go into this beautiful old cinema and watch movies in there. And it's that to me is the real experience.
Good popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the key. Like an old movie theater. I'll take that any day over like those new like big digital screens or something like that.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. One of the places I always go to over the summer is this place in Pennsylvania. It's actually the only 35mm projector drive-in theater left in North America, I think.
Are you for real?
Yeah, because all like there used to be more, you know, drive-in theaters all around, but they haven't been, you know, popular, you know, and they got, you know, mostly closed down. But there's like still a few, you know, around the country, but they're all digital projectors because most movies are now digital. So you don't need to have film projectors in movie theaters anymore because most movie theaters in America, any of those movie theaters, they're not, there's no film projector in them. It's just digital, you know, projectors now.
Wow.
So, because the companies, the film companies don't send out film prints. You just send out a link, I think, now. But this place it's in Pennsylvania. It's called the Mahoning Drive-In. And there was actually, do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, check it out. I think it's called At the Drive-In. It's a documentary about this place. It's about a 2-hour drive from me in New York. And it's, because they have a 35mm projector, they don't do new movies. They only do like curated weekends, like horror movie camping weekend. Like, you know, they do like a, it's called like Camp Blood, and it's all horror movies just based on, you know, in the woods or camping. And then they'll do a zombie weekend.
Oh,
it's all,
man.
And it's all these classic movies. I've seen so many of my favorite horror. I've seen every Nightmare on Elm Street there pretty much now.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and it's all original prints. They actually work with the studios because the studios still have these prints, but they just don't send it to anybody because nobody has projectors. So they're pretty much the only 35 millimeter projector. So they work with all the studios and they get the actual film prints. And they're so fucking cool at this place. You can go into the projector room and they'll let you take a picture holding a piece of the film from the movie. Like, I got it like a Nightmare. Like, I'm actually holding the reel that the movie's on, you know, with the film coming out. And you know, I'm like, I can touch it. And they're like, yeah, dude, you go ahead, take a picture with it. And I'm like, this movie, this is the actual from the 80s film print type of thing.
That's history right there.
Yeah, dude, the place is run by like basically like a bunch of 20-year-old guys. And it's a base, they're trying to make money, but it's not really about making money. And the popcorn is insane. The prices are really cheap. And you can camp there and you do spend the whole weekend there watching that movies.
So cool.
Movies a night.
Oh man, talk about living the dream, man. That is freaking rad, man.
You can bring in food. They have a really good like concession stand, but you can bring in your own food, you can bring in pizza, you can bring in alcohol, you can smoke, you know, pot, you can do whatever you want, and you're just sitting on these outdoors on this gigantic 35 millimeter screen. It's insane.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, check out that documentary.
I will, man. I will definitely do that. That's freaking rad, man. Man, I got to hand it to you, man. America is an amazing country. But like, you know, like every country, man, you know, we've got our ups and downs. But, man, you live in a country where you can go watch an original print of Nightmare on Elm Street on 35 millimeter film. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's what you guys are just so far away from that. So like it's hard for something like that to get down there to you.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of like relic video stores still kicking around that like revival video stores that sell the video VHS tapes and that. So, you know, there is a little bit of nostalgia sort of left around, and I think in parts of Australia there's even silent film silent theaters still in existence as well.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely some elements of culture that'll never go away. As much as modern technology may take over, there's certain
What's like a big what was like a big Hollywood influence on Australia?
Ooh, geez.
Like what movie or TV show or something came out in your lifetime where you saw like it took over, not just like, oh, for a weekend, everyone's talking about Stranger Things. Like what was like, whoa, this kind of changed things in Australia.
In recent times, I would definitely say the Kardashians.
Kardashians?
Yeah. Not for the good reasons either.
No. Yeah, I don't think the good reasons connected to the Kardashians.
I'm still trying to work out what they actually do. If I ever met them, I'd go, what do you actually do? Like, what's your claim to fame?
That's what's the sad thing is, most of the times when we have a sold out show at the Gramercy, I'll just jokingly say, oh, who's playing tonight? A TikTok star? And it usually is. Like, sold out shows are usually like a YouTube person or a TikTok star. And they're like a rapper or like, you know, R&B pop performer or something. And it's like, wow, this person sold out, and all they've done is YouTube and TikTok.
That's mental, man. How the times change, man.
Yeah, that's going back to what we were saying before about, you know, Facebook and stuff like that. You know, it started there, and now, you know, A&R guys, now all you have to do is just look at views. You know? Yeah,
that's sad.
A&R.
Let me ask you a question. I remember when we were in the States, we played a show in St. Louis, and I remember going into, I had a bit of downtime, so I went into a record store, and the guy had like, the walls were, there was a lot of cassettes, and I was like, dude, what's going on with the cassettes? And he's like, man, cassettes are a thing, man. People are, you know, collecting tapes again.
Yeah.
Is that still like, is that a thing?
I think people want it to become a thing.
Right.
I don't know if it's you see it more at like indie alternative and like death metal shows.
Right.
You'll see like a band that looks like it could play in a Brooklyn, you know, dive club bar thingy. You'll see them have a cassette because it's kind of like retro cool.
Right.
And then you'll like a death metal band have cassettes for this, you know, same reason, but not as kind of cheesy.
Yeah. You know? Right.
But it's apparently because they're cheap. And okay. I would have thought that making a cassette would be expensive. But apparently they're cheaper to make than CDs or something like that. And that's how it got started. But I don't even think I have a cassette player anymore. Like, I don't know where people are getting cassettes or if people are just buying them because it kind of looks cool, like a little collectible type thing. But yeah, you do see them. You do see them on merch tables at the venues and stuff like that. So
that's mental, man.
Yeah, because it took me a while to get into vinyl, but now that I'm into vinyl, I'm like, oh, like I almost can't listen to stuff now.
Yeah.
Like when I used to blast. I have like a nice JBL, like a little travel boombox thing that, you know, taking the dress rooms and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to blast stuff on that. I like, this is the peak. This is my Apple Music and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I don't need vinyl. Vinyl player, some nice speakers. And now I can't listen to, when I try and listen to stuff on the boombox or just on my phone or whatever, it just becomes so hollow.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same impact.
Not at all. Now I always put music on to cook dinner or whatever. I have I'm building my vinyl collection. I'm like 40-ish vinyl, I think, right now.
Yeah, nice.
But that's where, like, now that's my collection. Like, that's where if I'm going to put on music, I'm not putting it, like, if I'm on a train, I'll put my music on my ear pods and everything like that. But I'm not listening to digital music. If I'm listening to music, I'm choosing from whatever. If it's on vinyl, if not, then I'm not listening to it right now.
Wow.
But that's... so I get that with the vinyl. But there's no sound quality added to cassette.
No, there isn't. I mean, that's the thing, man. Like, you know, I've had this discussion with people so often. And I feel like when you pick up a vinyl record, there's a journey that's involved. It's like you put the record down, you put the needle on, and then you engross yourself in the artwork, the liner notes.
You display the artwork. Like, you stand the artwork up on the... when I play it, I always...
Exactly.
I don't just lay it down. I always stand it up so you can see the album.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about it, man. It's like, I don't know. I have my Spotify and stuff, but man, it's very hard to stay focused on a whole album from start to finish.
Oh, because once you have that option to move to the next song, why listen to an album?
Exactly. And I just feel like we've lost something there. And I just feel like when you pick up a vinyl record and you listen to that beautiful crackling sound of the vinyl, it's just... yeah, you're just about ready to just transport to another universe.
Yeah. The only drawback I've come to with a vinyl is that there are some times where, like, damn, that song is so good, I want to hear it again. And you can't. Just, that's the only thing. Or, like, if I'm, like I said, I like to put music on really loud when I'm cooking. I like to have, like, a drink, put some music on. And there are times where I'm, like, hands dirty, and I'm like, fuck, I know this is the last song on this side. And you know, it's like, if this was just iTunes, it would play repeat, you know.
Yeah
So that's that. The other, but that's like, you know what, that's for the sound experience, it's worth it. And I find myself staring at I'll stand in front of the record player and just stare at the speakers as the sound's coming out, because you're totally into it. Where I would never stare at a digital, like, I would never sit there and, like, look at my digital, my Bose player or my JBL player or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different experience altogether, man.
Oh, it's, you know what it feels like too? It feels like you're in the room with the recording. Like, it feels like the drums are in front of you. You got the guitar and bass player on your sides and the singer is behind you. And you're in the middle of this room, and you can actually hear the space. And then I've never realized what what you lost with all the compression through MP3s and everything. I never really realized that. You know, you don't hear the air in between things.
Yeah.
On anything digital, you don't hear any air. You might hear a blank space or a silent part, but you're not going to hear air in that silent part.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, there's massive differences there, and you know, I hope more and more people sort of make the jump to you know, take that journey into the vinyl world for sure.
Well, I don't think they're going cassettes are not gonna. I don't see cassettes making a huge comeback or anything, even though they are kind of sputtering along. Vinyl, I don't see vinyl going anywhere.
Vinyl's getting a huge revival, man. It's.
I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's a revival anymore. I think it's just
a thing.
Yeah, the revival's over. It worked.
Yeah. It's stuck around for the encore, and now it's here for life.
Yeah, because then how long can a revival go on and be called a revival? You know, can you be 10 years into a revival?
Not really, no. So I feel like this is the revival is it's gone. The encore is done, and it's now part of life.
Yeah, the band just chose to keep playing.
Yeah.
It's like a fish concert.
Yeah. I feel like, man, I feel like this is one of the vital components of music that's going to keep that purity intact that, you know, that we're losing on a gradual basis over the years of the music industry.
Yes, 100%. And like the ownership too.
Yeah.
The ownership. You know, it's still... You know the band isn't getting, if you're spending $20-$30 on a vinyl, the band's not getting that $20-$30, but they're gonna get like a million times more from that vinyl than any stream or download you could give them.
Absolutely.
So you're still paying the band for their work that they created, and you're still getting to own a piece of art that you don't have to worry about. Oh, I didn't subscribe to this channel for this month or something.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true, man. It's so true. And I won't hold you up for too much longer, man, but
Yeah, man, this is going good, man. Whatever.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Now I feel like, damn, we should have done this a few times already. This is really smooth.
Yeah, dude, totally.
This is what it was like. This was like touring. We talked once, like a couple of you guys.
I know, right?
It was a good hang.
Hell yeah, man. Good times, man. I wanted to ask about the New York music culture, man, because that's one thing I wish to this day. I wish I'd experienced New York music culture, man. And I like CBGBs and
yeah, I got to go there.
Like, I mean,
I got to do that at Roadrunner. When I was at Roadrunner, that was still there. We used to do go down there to check out bands, because at that, the funny thing about CBGBs is nobody, I like, it went from being a place to a place nobody played at, to a place where people like me in high school just tried to play there because we could say we played CBGBs.
Right.
But it was like anybody could play there at that point. Like when it closed down, bands would play there just because it was an easy venue to play at, or nobody wanted to play there anymore. It was just... And then they announce like, oh, CBGB's is going to close. And then you get bands like Korn and everybody coming in to play CBGB's, like secret shows and stuff like that. But for the reality is, for like the 10 years before it closed, like it wasn't, you know, I still went there. I went to see some tons of shows there at Roadrunner. Because like I said, it's not that far from the Roadrunner offices. And there was always smaller bands playing there.
Yeah, interesting, man. Because, I mean... I see lately the Viper Room in LA is getting ready to close down as well. And I don't know. I feel like these venues, they're not just a piece of property to tear down and just plonk a building on top of, you know. I feel like there's rich history in these walls that just needs to be nurtured and saved, right?
Unfortunately, the wrong people disagree with that. You know, if the building However, if like the building, you know, if what's his name, some famous painter or like famous like Mozart or somebody, if Mozart composed, you know, half of a symphony in a bedroom in this apartment building, then the whole apartment building would be considered, you know, a historical. Never, they could never do anything to the apartment building. Yeah. But you have a venue like CBGB's where, you know, countless musical history happened there and they just let it fall apart.
Yeah.
It gets pulled off. And now it's a John Varvatos clothing store.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. Man, like so many of my favorite venues where I live just all got ripped down and turned into apartment buildings and shit. And it's just, it's a real travesty.
In New York City, if you knew what happened in New York City, you'd be, you know, even not being a New Yorker, you'd be like, you say it's a travesty. It's what everything that's been cool about New York, it's all been taken away, just to not even necessarily to knock things down, just to move things in to get better rent. And like, yeah. I used to have now St. Mark's Place. You ever hear about St. Mark's Place?
No.
So St. Mark's Place was just a little bit south of a little bit north of CBGB's, but in between, if you're walking from Union Square to CBGB's, you'd probably walk through St. Mark's Place. And St. Mark's Place is where like the Ramones hung out, and I think Joey Ramone lived there. And it's like this little street, and it was all vintage, like clothing stores, vintage record stores. There used to be this place called Kim's Video, and when DVDs started coming out, it was the only place you could get like imported DVDs from around the world. Wow. Like you could get like random like Korean horror movie. It was like the coolest place in the world. So cool that actually, do you know Alamo Draft House, the movie place?
I think so. Yeah,
they're like kind of like a retro movie theater chain. Mm. They actually bought the name Kim's Video, and they're doing. Like that's what their merch stores are in the Alamo Dream's videos now or something like that.
Damn.
But yeah, St. Mark's, it used to be the coolest, like tattoos. If you wanted to be rock and roll or anything related to rock and roll, you went to St. Mark's Place, and now you walk through St. Mark's Place and it's like yogurt stores and Apple phone stores, and like Kim's Video is like some kind of like a Claire, like what like those like Claire's where like teenage girls can get like earrings and
oh real
similar, you know, like all like, oh, pink stuff and all that kind of thing.
Oh man,
but like the whole street has just been complete. There's like one tattoo place left on it, and it, you know, it's just kind of sad how like the whole, they completely got rid of all that kind of stuff. You know, and in some ways it's good, some ways it's bad. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, you really couldn't walk like you did, but it was, you know, there was definitely chances of getting, you know, approached by a bum or get possibly mugged or robbed or something, you know, definitely. Yeah. But then, you know, that all changed. Basically, you know, they cleaned up Times Square. They basically took Times Square as like the epicenter, and they cleaned up Times Square and made it all like Disney, and MTV moved there, and you remember MTV Live had their studio. Yeah. You know, they took that and then they just branched it out slowly in every direction from Times Square until pretty much all of New York is like, you know, Madame Tussauds House of Wax type of thing. You know, it's all just touristy stuff and like,
jeez,
Gap stores and stuff. It's not really anything special anymore.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, man, because, yeah, I mean, there's so much magic that comes from that place and the times. And
when you ask people about touring, they'll say, you know, America is just a venue and a Walmart, you know, venue, Walmart, you know, fast food, venue, Walmart.
Dude, that's so true. Exactly what I would tell you.
Yeah, that's basically what's unique. Maybe when you go to this town in the Southwest, it's, you know, everything now has Peppers in the logo.
Yeah. But
other than that, it's the same stuff you're going to get in Texas as you are in North Carolina. It's pretty much same stores, same everything. You know, where you go to Europe, you go to a different city in Europe, you're in a different city.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Completely different foods, different this, different. They don't have this here. They only do that. That doesn't really exist anymore too much in America, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. But at least you're living life really well, working at the Gramercy Theater and getting to, play some, mix some cool bands and play some shows and stuff, man. And
life is good, man. Life's good.
Yeah. I mean, what are you enjoying more, playing or working with bands?
Oh, definitely playing. I mean, you can't, I mean, you know that when you go on stage, there's nothing, I haven't experienced, drugs or just like pot, but there's no high anywhere that I could imagine. There's nothing, there's no drug or anything that I could ever imagine that's better than when you walk onto stage and start playing music.
Yeah, absolutely.
There really isn't. It's
like what we talked about earlier about playing on stage in Europe and that, like there's something electrifying about that, you know, you just it's almost like a once in a lifetime experience for most of us.
Oh, but I don't even think I finished saying that with the festival experiences. Like the first half and most of the festival shows, they're not like, you know, you'd be on a headline tour and you're playing 70 to 90 minutes a night, and then you play a festival and you're playing 30 minutes, you know, 40 minutes. So you have to cut a lot of songs and you don't have time to necessarily fall into a set and kind of, because when you play a show, like, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes, it's like, you know, lights flashing and you're just kind of getting used to it. Okay, here's how we're doing this tonight. Here's how my shoulder's going to hurt a little bit tonight. Or you're just going through the, you know, first 10 minutes, making sure everything's good. And then you kind of settle into the middle of the set and then you build up, you know, for the, you know, the big ending type of thing. When you lose half your set, you got to readjust all of that. So, you know, whenever we did those festivals, I always remember the first three songs, like I just remember my arms being numb.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They're moving and my body's moving. You know, if you watch the videos, I'm performing like crazy.
Oh, but man. I loved watching you perform, man. It was great.
Oh, thanks, man. It's, you know, it's fun. It's just, I'm not even trying to do it. I'm just doing it. And that's when you go into those, like, I'm just numb and like, you know, almost like little pins and needle feeling. And it's because it's just the adrenaline and you're so hyped up. But you got to remember, you got to control it because you're on a click track and stuff like that. You really, you know, you can't control. You got to, you know, your body might be telling you to go a million miles an hour, but you got to calm it down to 100. So it takes, you know, two or three songs and then you kind of settle down and you catch your breath and all of a sudden you look and you're like, holy shit. And then you just try and smile. I tried not to smile for the rest of the song. Like once the adrenaline wore off and I realized what I was doing, still I had to keep a mind to myself, put on a rock face. Don't start smiling. Yeah. You know?
I think that's the hardest thing is like trying to keep that straight face or that game face on. And I don't know. I just kind of just gave in the end and just go, man, we're here for a good time, not a long time, man. Let's live in the moment. Let's friggin' have fun.
Yeah, that's all, because when I'm truly performing, I probably look like an ass. But at that moment, I'm my most free.
Yeah.
Because I'm not thinking about it. If I was thinking about it, there's definitely, I've seen pictures or video and guys in the band have, you know, joked like, oh, look at this face you're making. Or like, oh, what? You know, like I'll make like a weird face where I'm like kind of trying hard or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, if I'm thinking about that, then I'm not. So when I'm not thinking about that is when I'm kind of the most free. And that's, you have to be, you know, I've had fans come up to me and say, I love watching you. And they're not trying, they're like European. So they're not trying to be offensive.
Yeah.
But they're trying to translate it into English, what they're trying to say. And they'll be like, I love how you don't care. You look stupid. You just perform. And I know what they're saying. Like, I'm not thinking about how I look. I'm not thinking, oh, is this cool? Or is this the, you know, I'm just up there. And they see it. They feel it. They're like, he's just performing. And, you know, so that's kind of a cool thing. You can't replace that.
Yeah.
I can play drums in my garage. You know, I'm going to play drums as soon as we get off this. But can't get that performance. I'll never perform like in a garage.
Yeah, for sure, man. I won't hold you up for much longer. But I just want to ask you too. Also, like, I mean, one of the electrifying things that I enjoyed about touring with you guys and just watching the Combi Cry show was the playoff between you and Dane, from a drum percussive angle. It was just like symmetry, man, in motion. Like, how's that for you? Like, you know, sharing drumming duties with another drummer trying to do the same thing.
Well, it's fun. It was fun. Mm. And Dane and I actually clicked really well. We had a bunch of people tell us that
you guys were tight, man.
Yeah, we worked hard at it. And we did a lot of early on, because that's the first time we ever played with each other, was with Combi Christ. And I remember doing a lot of eye contact with him, like early on, like we would kind of be looking over our shoulder, looking at this guy, you know, and I say on his end, but I know that I always try to, at the very least, match our hands.
Yeah.
So like his snare hand, or his left hand, you know, it's main, you know, if you're a righty drummer, your left hand's your snare hand. I always tried to make sure that if I could see him out of the corner of my eye, I always wanted to make sure that our downward snare hit was always in sync, because then you could always kind of build from that. As long as we're, you know, you don't want to have the main 1, 2, 3, or 4 beat be not in sync.
Yeah.
You know, you can have the ends or the notes, whatever. You could have stuff like that be off, and then it sounds like you're playing together with each other on top of each other, or, you know, or two different rhythms at the same time. But when you have to have the downbeats, the 1, 2, 3, 4, those got to be together. If those aren't together, it sounds like you're doing some kind of flam thing, or so, you know, it just sounds off. So that was always really important, to make sure those beats, the main beats, locked up. And then after a couple of shows, we both started finding spots for him to do a fill, for me to do a fill, for us to do something together, for me to do something that rolls into him doing something, or vice versa. You know,
yeah.
We started to find all those cool little symmetries that we could do. So by the time we got to you guys in Australia, I think we'd already played like 100 something shows together. So we had a lot of that worked out already.
That's so cool, man. It was just such an impressive thing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I love what they're, you know, I'm going to support the band. I love what they're doing now, but I loved being up there doing the double drums with Dane. It makes sense now with what they're doing, you know, the touring wise and budget wise, to kind of, you know, have the keyboard player do double drums at the same time, instead of having a separate member do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is for the moment. Hopefully, you know, things will change in the future.
And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yep. It'd be cool to see you back in the saddle up there, man, doing the thing.
I mean, I still got the kit. You know, I still got that stand up kit. We didn't use that one in Australia. We used the rentals there, but that cool one that I have with those metal keg looking ones.
They're so good, man.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. Yeah, what about you? What's going on with you?
We're on a bit of a hiatus at the moment. I'm kind of over it a bit. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm getting that itch, man. I'm just like, I miss music, man. I miss it a lot.
Life getting in the way down there with everybody type of
thing. Yeah, life happens, dude. Life happens. It's good. Don't get me wrong. It is good. But, you know, at the same time too, you know, there's a beautiful magic that cannot be ignored.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed the wait won't be too far away. So, yeah. But,
dude, we should do some type of collaboration or something like that.
Hell yeah, man. Totally. That'd be sick.
I see people doing, like, you know, during the pandemic, people were doing like super group online band covers type of thing.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to put together something like that. It'd be pretty fun.
I reckon that's a great idea. I think that's an awesome idea. Hey, What I got one last question for you, dude. Did when you were in Australia, did I'm pretty sure I tried to get you guys trying Vegemite. Did you try Vegemite?
Oh, it's nasty. Nasty.
Why? Come on, dude. No.
And then I actually had an Australian fan back here trying it, brought it to one of my shows from another band that I was playing in. And I was like, oh, I can't even the smell of it. But they said, like, I think I tried it like on my fingertip. Like, I think I like pinkied it. Like,
yes, you did. I remember. Yes, I remember now. You said
you have to spread it on toast or something like that to get the.
Yeah, you were like that bloody little kid that just wouldn't. You just put your little pinky toe in the water and you wouldn't jump in. You know, and it's like, dude, just go all in, man.
Just like palm it, just like reach in and grab. It was kind of like it's like a sticky.
It is very yeasty.
Yeah, like a Nutella syrup.
Yes. But you've got to have the ratio of butter to Vegemite. You've got to have that right. Otherwise, it's exactly what you say. It's nasty.
And what is it when it's right? What's the flavor profile when it's done right? Is it like a fruity? Is it like a fruity taste?
It's still yeasty, but it's just a heavenly taste, man.
But what is it? What's the main ingredient? Is it crushed down? Like, what was it?
That's a good question. I mean,
you don't even know what it is.
No. Let me explore this, because Vegemite is like it's the sort of thing that, you know, you can put in your stir fries, you can put in your salad, or at least I do anyway.
Is it called Vegemite, but there's no vegetables in it?
That's right. It's Vegemite, and it's basically it's concentrated yeast extract. So it's basically extracted from yeast grown on barley and wheat, and
so it's just yeast,
pretty much. Just a
so salty, that's some, so is that something a, like gluten people can't eat?
No, I'm gonna take an educated guess and say they can. it has got some sugar in it. But not a lot. But yeah, if you're gluten intolerant, I probably wouldn't recommend it then. But dude, it rocks.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe I think I've actually seen that in a store here, like Whole Foods or something like that. Yeah. Maybe if I'm feeling adventurous one day, maybe I'll pick it up and I'll send you a video of me.
Please. I might have to send you a video of how to make the ultimate Vegemite sandwich.
Oh yeah, post it.
Yeah, definitely. I'll get to work on that one. Cool, man. Well, I'm gonna wrap it up there, Will. But man, I definitely feel like we need to do this again, man, because this is super cool.
Yeah, dude, this was pretty smooth. This went quick.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that's how I roll these chats, man. Just smooth, casual, and fun.
It's just the damn time zone difference. It's like next to you in there, right?
It's like 3 a. It's 3 a.m. here, so yeah, it's zombie o'clock, man.
sorry for keeping you up late.
No, man, you're good. It's all good, but no, man, we'll do this again for sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and what you traveling up here? You leaving the island anytime soon? Or
I'd love to, man. I'd love to travel. So we'll work on it. It'll happen.
Cool, man.
Right on. Okay, man. Well, yeah, man. Keep doing that thing that you do, man. And bloody, yeah, just keep up the good work, man. And it sounds like you're living life and life's good. And yeah, kicking goals, man. Keep it up.
Yeah, man. Same to you. Good luck, you know, with your... We didn't even talk about... Did you... Another freaking sign coming out?
We're making number 4 as we speak. Yes.
Nice, man. Nice.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So it's unlike Donkey Kong, man. And my Baseball Furies comic book is coming out soon. And yeah, got some cool shit on the horizon, man.
Sweet, man.
Hell yeah. But yeah, we'll definitely talk about all that on another episode, I reckon.
Yeah, let's do another one.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Cool. Well, you guys smash some drums and have some fun.
You get some sleep.
I might go do that. All right, man. Look after yourself, bro.
All right. Later, dude.
Cheers.
And that concludes my chat with Will Spodnick. Huge thanks to Will for taking the time to share his happy days and just a great, fun, epic chat we had. That was a good one. Yeah, definitely. I was a bit brain fried by the end, but that's what you do for the sake of putting out a fun podcast, right? Thanks to all you guys and gals for tuning in. And if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on whatever platform that you listen to this podcast on. It definitely helps support the channel. And thank you so much for listening to this show. It's great. It's great to have such awesome support. Now, if you haven't already, check out www.frekproductions.com. That's my own creative vessel, Freak Productions, where it's too weird to be a freak. And it's a great place where I'm creating awesome creative content. So thanks again to Will for taking the time to chat with me. This has been a good one. And as always, stay happy, everyone. Have a positive week and may it be filled with nothing but happiness. Till then, stay awesome. You've been amazing. I've been Jesse. And till next we meet, my friends. Peace.